toplessrobot.com presents...
You're listening to Animated Opinions, a podcast that has had all the skeletons removed from it in order to play better to a Chinese audience. I'm Melanie.
What?
Yeah, in China, they don't like skeletons. Like, they don't want to see skeletons in movies and stuff. So, like, Chinese movies don't have skeletons in them. It's a cultural thing.
I'm Emily, and I just learned something today, I guess.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like... I don't know. I feel like in a lot of Eastern culture, there are things that are just like everyone agrees is bad luck and you shouldn't fuck with them. And skeletons is one of those things.
Stop that. Praline, I will take that away.
Like, I have Hold to on, agree, just... though. Skeletons Praline. Seem like they're bad luck.
No, stop that. My dog is helping me podcast and she's very upset about it.
What is she doing?
Praline, hey! No. Stop that. You ready for the guiltiest face I'm about to send you? Because I took a picture of it to document her shame.
She's mobbing so hard.
She's ripping the green off of... Oh, she is so chastised. She's ripping the green off of her tennis ball.
Rude.
Yeah, like picking at it. Here's a picture of her.
Is it small ball or big ball?
It's small ball. She doesn't do this to big ball.
It's because big ball is more deserving of love. I'm not going to lie.
But she loves small ball.
Because she's like, ooh, choking hazard.
If I stare at her while we podcast, she can't do it again. Now she's pretending like she's never done it. And she doesn't know why she's in trouble.
You realize your dog looks like fucking Dobby, right?
No, she does not look like Dobby the house elf. She's Emily. So upset right now.
Okay.
She has satellite ears. She looks like a gremlin.
This image of Dobby would like to say otherwise.
Oh, no. This podcast is going great.
Yes, we watched Rock Dog.
Yay, Rock Dog.
Yay. I hope you enjoy it. Did that send? Is it sending?
It's not sending. Anyway, while we're doing that and I stare at my dog out of the corner of my eye so she doesn't rip the green off of her tennis ball because this is something she does, I guess. Rock Dog was a film animated... We'll start the podcast over again. Okay, Rock Dog is a film animated... No! W2.jpg.
Tell me that's not a mood, though.
Ugh.
Cat, you can sit in my lap, or you can fucking get out.
My dog is way cuter than Dobby the house elf.
It's the same mood.
She has satellite ears.
They're literally twins.
I know. Me. Everybody says what a pretty dog she is when we go outside.
Yes. Yes, they do.
She good girl. Hey, honey. She's really mad that I yelled at her to stop. Like, she's actually still looking at me with that same face. Like, I basically told her that her whole family is dead. Honey, stop looking at me like that. Oh, my God. Rock Dog. It was a film animated by Real Effects, which is the same studio that brought us Free Birds in 2013, which we haven't watched yet. She has decided to dramatically flop onto her side. And The Book of Life in 2014, which I don't think we could call bad, but I also haven't seen it. So
yeah.
I mentioned those two films very specifically, because as you'll notice, Book of Life, at least, is of a slightly higher quality.
Book of Life is really good.
Now, here's where I dug a little bit, because Rock Dog doesn't seem to quite be to that same standard, you know? And what I discovered is that RealFX does contract work. So they released the two originals that I mentioned before, Free Birds and Book of Life, and a film with Cirque du Soleil, but they also make films for other companies. And those films are as follows. The Wild and Everyone's Hero, which both came out in 2006. Then, after an 11-year gap, we get Rock Dog in 2017, Sherlock Gnomes in 2018, and Ugly Dolls in 2019.
Shit, these are all just movies we need to watch.
Yeah. Unrelated, I also think it's hilarious that RealFX's Wikipedia page still clings to the fact that they were allegedly once attached to Rise of the Guardians back in 2012. And to quote it directly, in October 2012, The Hollywood Reporter revealed RealFX's connection to the 2012 feature film Rise of the Guardians. The film is based on RealFX's short film Man in the Moon, directed by William Joyce and Brandon Oldenburg at RealFX Creative Studios. It is based on Joyce's book series, The Guardians of Childhood. So William Joyce is an author. This is only partially true because in 2005, William Joyce and RealFX launched a joint venture, Amesworth Amusements, to produce CG animated feature films, one of which was set to be based on The Guardians of Childhood.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't happen. They ended up only creating that short film, The Man in the Moon, which was directed by Joyce. And then, because it didn't seem like it was going to fucking happen, Joyce sold the film rights to DreamWorks Animation because DreamWorks was just like, legit, we'll get this done and we respect your vision and you can be involved in the creative process. We can definitely at some point talk about how Rise of the Guardians would have been different as a RealFX movie. But that's definitely its own episode. I won't say better or worse because I feel like it would have been the same in the end. I changed my mind. I think it would have been worse based solely on like look wise.
I don't know.
Like, that movie is beautiful.
That's true.
Is visually stunning. DreamWorks knocked it out of the park for 2012. And I think if RealFX had handled it, it would have looked trash.
I actually like a lot of the way that RealFX's films look. I feel like they do a lot with a limited budget. Have you seen what Ugly Dolls looks like?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an outsourced movie, though.
Oh.
So of their movies that they have done, the one that everybody seems to enjoy is Book of Life, which I have not seen. I cannot speak to it. I assume it's good because everyone loves it.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong. Everybody liked Coco, and I thought Coco was trash.
Oh, so did I.
Hmm.
So boring.
Thank you. I wanted to agree with you, but I had just taken a sip of my vodka soda.
It is just painfully dull.
Like all Pixar films.
Shh, don't tell people that. The only good Pixar film is Monsters, Inc.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Also, no. Ratatouille.
I was about to say, how dare you? How dare you forget about Ratatouille?
Yeah, those are the two good Pixar films.
So, not talking about Pixar.
No.
We're talking about RealFX and Rock Dog. So the budget for Rock Dog was about $60 million, making it the most expensive Chinese-financed animated production. I think it still holds that title solely because I don't remember... I think Abominable is American financed. Pearl Studios is involved. Abominable did cost more, though. Slightly more than the $60 million. So if Abominable was Chinese financed, which I don't think it was, that it would take the throne from Rock Dog. But if it is American financed, as I believe it to be, Rock Dog still remains the most expensive Chinese financed production. It is based on a graphic novel written and illustrated by a Chinese rock star, Zheng Jun, and it was inspired by his own rock career. The graphic novel's characters, I looked into it, I researched. The graphic novel's characters look like someone took a Muppet and crossed it with the Goofy movie, and I'm going to make the bold statement, I had made this statement before even viewing Rock Dog, like the film, only seeing the trailer, which usually looks better than the movie. Only seeing stills, only having been exposed to that, researched the graphic novel, I made the statement that the character design in the movie would be more appealing.
Oh, yes, I am looking at this. It's like not quite furry. It's like you specifically drew animals to be unattractive to furries.
Yes, Because in China, furries don't exist.
Yeah, like, it's weird how uncute the art is, despite wanting to be cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something. So, a lot of reviews for Rock Dog, because, of course, I was exposed to those in articles. I wasn't looking for articles about reviews for Rock Dog. I was looking for articles about the production of Rock Dog. And what I ended up finding was how everyone would talk about the English voice cast and how much effort they put in, but it was getting lost by the generic plot and the Americanized gags and jokes, which really makes me kind of want the Chinese version more, but I don't think we're ever going to see it unless it was part of that home video release, because it was cast English first, written by American screenwriters, with June alleging that he had a heavy hand in it all. And there's a reference to a pun based on Pasadena, which I wasn't aware that Pasadena was well known outside of the Los Angeles area. So if anyone listens to this podcast, let us know outside of this exact reference if you've heard of Pasadena. And if you saw Rock Dog at all, exclude that reference as well.
I would like to update you all. It was a joke about a Beach Boys song, The Little Old Lady from Pasadena. Yeah, well, it's a fucking rock and roll joke, so it makes sense.
I still didn't understand it.
I'm angry because I didn't have the knowledge to understand this joke.
Speaking about Americans being dumb, I don't know if American audiences are just, like, viewed by other countries as being too dumb or too, like, homogenized as Americans, air quotes around Americans, because we're not just dumb white hicks, people. There are other kinds of Americans.
Let's look at the movies that make money and then talk about what Americans attend films, because I think you'll see a pattern.
Okay, but look at the movies that make money. The movies that make money are the movies that are heavily marketed, and they also fucking are so targeted to specific audiences. So that's what I'm saying. I don't understand if Americans are seen as too dumb or too homogenized to handle the films of other countries, but it is a trend that I just don't enjoy. Recutting and recasting just ruins perfectly good movies. And then distributors are just like, well, it's not going to do well in America because you're just fucking doing it to yourselves. Like, I understand.
I get recasting a kid's movie and rewriting little bits and pieces of kids' movies just to make them easier to understand for the American child audience. Because, like, an American kid is different than a French kid. That's fine. But you're right about wedging in all the shitty jokes and, like, changing plots just because it might be too complicated. Like, no, just add in a line of expository dialogue and keep moving.
Add a narrator if you have to.
Yeah.
It's the easiest thing to do.
Dame Judi Dench is literally always free.
Yeah. literally just call her and she'll just make up a narration for you. And then you're good. You're good to go. Yeah. Dame Judi Dench saves your movie.
Done and done.
One and done. But yeah, it's just a trend I don't enjoy. Really appreciate the fact, this is going to be very weirdly specific, but you're going to have to bear with me. I really appreciate the fact that a lot of foreign animated films are now distributed by G Kids.
Oh, yeah. I love G Kids.
Because they don't fuck.
No.
They're just legit. They're like, we're going to release this. We're going to do A, B, and C to release it. We're going to advertise it to the best of our ability with what money we have for advertising, which that's the other thing. Foreign films that are distributed in America are usually not distributed by large distribution companies. And when they are, aka the Weinstein Company, aka Disney releasing their own competition, they butcher it on purpose.
Yeah.
So that no one wants to go see it, or they just don't advertise it. So the Guardian Brothers, which was the Weinstein butchering of Little Door Gods, I was looking forward to that movie. I was waiting for it to come out. I was waiting for news. I was waiting for a release. And I remember reading an article about it. And it was just like, yep, it's coming. And then like 2 days later, they're just like, actually, holy shit, it's here. They just dropped it on Netflix and didn't announce it.
Yep.
And so the distribution of foreign animated films is so grossly mishandled that American audiences never see them half of the time. I would say 90% of the time they don't see them. So we get films that are perfectly acceptable, like Rock Dog, but it's not advertised well, it's not handled well, and then no one goes to see it, or no one...
And then it ends up reviewed on this show.
Yeah, it ends up reviewed on the show because we think it's going to be terrible. And I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it wasn't shit either.
Yeah.
Raylene, are you okay?
Oh, I want to eat my tennis ball.
No, she just had a moment where she like woke up and I don't think she remembered where she was.
Your dog is painfully stupid.
She tries her best. So, yeah, this Rock Dog. We're still talking about Rock Dog. This movie was released and it premiered at the Shanghai International Film Festival, which took place between June 11th and June 19th in 2016. It was released in China on July 8th, 2016, and it was theatrically released in February of 2017 in the U.S. Hi, honey. She's having a moment. I don't know what her deal is. By Lionsgate through Summit Premiere Label, and it was also released on digital HD May 9th and on DVD and Blu-ray on May 23rd, both in 2017. I kind of want to get a copy of this from the library just to see if they have the Chinese version of it or like if they have anything, but unclear.
So teenage Rock Tibetan Dog, Mastiff, Bodhi, voiced by Luke Wilson, is expected to be the next guard of the village of Snow Mountain, read Tibet, succeeding his father, Kampa, J.K. Simmons, who years ago drove out a pack of gangster gray wolves led by the villainous Linux, voiced by Louis Black. Kampa has some local sheep disguised as mastiffs to give the illusion the village has multiple guards to keep the wolves at bay, but Bodhi has trouble perfecting his father's signature move, the Iron Paw, which projects a powerful blast that only can happen if Bodhi finds the fire within. Kampa has forbidden music in the village as it distracted Bodhi from his duties when he was younger. This film opens on a really cute 2D segment. It's adorable.
Yeah, I was worried from the second you said that this movie would end up being okay, which for the purposes of our podcast is both disappointing but also acceptable, because I enjoy not trash just as much as I enjoy trash. I know this may shock people.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 2D segment was adorable. Baby Bodhi was so cute.
Adorable. I wish this movie was in the 2D instead.
Too expensive.
I know.
Yeah. There was also a line about how just like, yep, you know, everywhere there's always wolves. I was like, but sometimes there aren't and it's a problem. Like, you overhunt the predator and it doesn't always work that way. Oh, what we miss? No. You went over it in the plot. I forgot about the Iron Paw.
Yeah.
Apparently the ability to Kamehameha is genetic and Kampa is a fucking dictator.
Hey, here's a question. Where the fuck is Bodhi's mom?
Dead. Bodhi's mom is a wolf. I'll cover that later.
Okay.
I'll cover this later. There's also a character named Fleetwood Yak, who I hate because he's just our narrator. But Bodhi does these really cute little, like, tail wags as his secondary, like, character animation. So if he's reaching into the shed to, like, poke at the instruments that his dad has locked up because his dad's a fucking dictator. Spoilers. And he's poking at the instruments and we kind of like see him from a 3/4 profile view and he's just having a good time and he's wagging his little tail.
Yeah, it's very cute.
I love it. It's so cute.
This plot is super stereotypical. You can tell right from the beginning that Bodhi's gonna play the guitar to kill the wolves. Goodbye, I'm done with this film.
Just like in Barnyard.
Yeah, it is exactly like Barnyard.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
Oh, Barnyard.
Barnyard 2, dog. So,
well, Barnyard 2, Tibet.
Yes. Kevin James is now Tibetan.
Oh no, Kevin James is Bodhi.
That would be great. I would pay money.
Oh, no. So,
after a disastrous training session with his iron paw, Bodhi indirectly causes a nearby flying plane to drop a package. Among the items, Bodhi becomes interested in a radio and listens to rock and roll, becoming entranced with British rock legend Angus Scattergood, voiced by Eddie Izzard. Bodhi steals a traditional dramion from a den of locked-up instruments, adds additional strings to make it a Western guitar, and neglects his duties in favor of becoming a musician, putting him at odds with his father. After Kampa and some of the guard sheep accidentally cause Bodhi to unleash a false alarm on the village while dressed as wolves in an attempt to scare him straight, Vilder Ellidge, Fleetwood Yak, Sam Elliott, convinces Kampa to let Bodhi follow his dream. Bodhi is given a bus ticket to the nearby city, but Kampa makes him promise to give up music if his trip doesn't work out. At the bus station, Bodhi is discovered by two of Linux's henchmen, Riff, voiced by Kenan Thompson, and Skaz, who I guess is voiced by no one, and he orders them to kidnap Bodhi, reasoning it is his chance to take over Snow Mountain.
I would like to take this opportunity to say that the environments in this movie are lovely. They are stylized in such a way that it fits the feel of the movie. Like, you could tell that they were working with a limited budget. And they feel real in the context of the film, but they're not hyper-realistic. Which I love, because I hate the fact that everything has to be stupidly hyper-realistic nowadays. Looking at you, good dinosaur. Fuck you, Pixar. The one moment where I was like, ooh, the budget. There was a lack of eye specs on Bodhi when we go into his pupil as he does this like weird music-based hallucination. And he just looks so dead inside.
Yeah, I really liked the nondescript rock music that Bodhi got very into. It was funny.
Yeah, it was the elevator music of rock.
I also appreciated the fact that it was like an NPR interview with Angus Scattergood. That made me chuckle a bit. Also, I got really excited because I realized since this is a Chinese movie, there won't be a love interest.
Why is that a thing? Also, his one true love is music, but, like, why is that a thing?
Because, like, there Wait. Are child limits. Because cultural standards don't dictate that romance is a necessity like it is in Western culture in China.
Now that I'm thinking about it, Abominable didn't have it either.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, it's great. I love the fact that there's no romance.
Yeah, I appreciate this. Wait a minute. Fuck.
Yeah, you didn't think about that, did you?
Oh, no, I really enjoy it. Hey, Studio Ghibli movies have some romance, depending on the movie.
Yeah, but they're always, like, contextual, and it's not like every little kid is always in love with someone, which I feel like every Western movie always has a love interest, and it's so annoying.
That's valid.
Like, you just don't need it in every movie. You know what movie didn't need a love subplot? Monster House.
Did Monster House have it?
Yeah, the two kids kind of, like, smooched or something at the end. Whatever it was, I was like, I don't care about this.
Yeah, no, I don't care. It makes me super uncomfortable. So I haven't watched season 3 of Stranger Things just because I started getting, like, weirdly uncomfortable with, like, the romances.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I don't know if I like this. And now they're just rolling out Stranger Things because their child actors are becoming actual adults and they're like, shit.
More Stranger Things right now.
More Stranger Things right now because we filmed these back to back so that our actors didn't age up anymore like they did.
There's a great gag in the movie where a sheep barber showing how his dad scared him straight with a book of unshorn sheep. Very funny joke. Genuinely made me laugh.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Also, I just want to point out, the character models are economical, but they're still attractive. The only thing I don't like is how many teeth Bodhi has, but otherwise they're very cute.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by the teeth, but that's what happens when you can't really pay for fur or hair, so they're hard modeling everything the best they can and slapping some textures on it. And honestly, they did a fucking fantastic job. I love the character models. Bodhi is super cute. Dharma, who we meet later, is a fox. She's cute.
She's great.
The sheep look great. Kampa looks great. Fleetwood Yak looks great. Angus looks amazing. Best character. I love Angus.
Oh, yeah.
I like that he's a white cat, but he only wears black.
They didn't do a fur joke about that.
No, but they did do a joke where he's, after they're in the dumpster, we're skipping ahead for this joke for the purpose of what we're talking about. Angus is in a dumpster, and when he gets out, he starts furiously cleaning himself by licking.
Yeah.
Like, he's licking his hands, but they taste like garbage, so he's revolted. And I was like, hey, cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Personally, I would have done a gag with him in a lint roller, but that's because I have a cat who gets her fur on everything I own.
I have a light-colored dog, and I like to wear dark-colored clothing, so I feel that very much.
But yeah, so, okay, in Dad's police state, did they really not do lockdown drills with the village that everyone ran outside when they heard there were wolves? And also, like, I get it. All the sheep are stupid. Ha ha ha. Funny joke. But it's not that funny.
They are sheep. That's the whole joke. They can only do what other sheep are doing because they are sheep. Also, how'd the fire fucking start? So Bodhi accidentally knocks over a lantern that starts a fire. But, like, the fire... it's on bricks, on the dry ground. And, like, suddenly there's a fire spreading?
Oh, it was because it was... there was a ball of yarn conveniently rolling acted as a wick.
Right. So, but the fire, like, it drops on the ground, and then the whole little lantern is engulfed in fire. But it's clearly, yes, like, just a candle inside.
Yes.
And then the yarn ball rolls through the large fire. And goes in and explodes the fireworks.
Yes.
Anyway, do we think Lou Wilson can sing?
Is his voice singing?
I don't think. It definitely isn't. But his voice always kind of shocks me. Because it's higher than I remember it being every time. Like, I swear, every time I watch or listen to anything with Luke Wilson in it, his voice gets higher.
I really like Luke Wilson, though, as a voice actor. I think he does really good.
No, he's fine. Like, he never took me out of it.
Yeah.
I like Rock-Dog. Oh.
I also really liked the fact that Bodhi didn't leave in shame after the village incident. It was more like, all right, son, I still love you. You can go try your journey. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. I appreciate that. Also, then they played the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, but where the fuck is Coldplay?
Sorry, no Coldplay. This is a rock movie.
That's fair. I found out the hard way that I didn't hate Rock Dog yet.
Yep.
And yeah, there's that beautiful, beautiful matte painting. When the bus is driving through the mountains and they come over the hill and there's just sunlit clouds with the city, like the tops of the skyscrapers are just poking out through the clouds. And that matte painting was fucking beautiful. I was like, shit, I love it. It was so good.
Agreed.
So Bodhi takes a bus to the city.
Yep, he arrives at the city and heads to Rock and Roll Park, as that's where Angus Scattergood began his career. He attempts to join a band consisting of the down-to-earth fox Dharma, an absent-minded goat drummer, who is clearly a stoner. However, Bodhi is humiliated after losing a guitar contest to arrogant snow leopard Trey. Amused by Bodhi's naivete, Trey discovers his idolization for Scattergood and manipulates Bodhi into convincing Angus to give him guitar lessons at his mansion. Though he does know a little secret about Angus's security setup. What the fuck are these sentences? Look, long story short, Angus Scattergood's mansion has a shitload of security and Bodhi is just stupid enough to get around it.
Yep. Scattergood is revealed to be a white Persian cat who wears black sunglasses all the time and has a serious case of writer's block, and his only companion is a robot butler named Ozzy. Angus's manager, Ian, gives him 3 days to create a new song. The secret they're referring to is Trey saying, oh, be sure to lick the gates for good luck.
Oh, yeah. And it's electrified.
The gates are electric. Yeah. Also, I fucking gagged at Trey the musician because that's what happens when you briefly date a musician named Trey.
Emily, you went on like 2 dates.
I said briefly.
Okay. There are 9 animal models in this film. Cat, dog, bunny, wolf, fox, alligator, hippo, sheep, mouse, pig, cheetah. That's probably more than 9. I counted and then continued to add. So that's really 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
That's bear. 9.
12.
Shit. 12. Yeah.
12.
As someone who had to work on a version of A Chinese City for like 3 months, Rock Dog was fucking taking me home. Like, just looking at the city environment they had, and I was like, oh my god, this is the exact same fucking city we used. And I was like, oh no, abominable ripped off Rock Dog.
Bodhi just has his little plinky plonk wooden guitar. No one should be able to hear it, and they constantly pretend like it's attached to an amp.
Is it a guitar, or is it like a Tibetan traditional instrument?
It's a Tibetan traditional instrument with 2 extra strings. I'm just calling it a guitar for shorthand.
Okie dokie. I honestly didn't care about that. I didn't really like his overeager enthusiasm. I get that he's a dog, and I still didn't understand the Pasadena reference that Trey uses.
Yeah, it was a Beach Boys joke. Bodhi does a break and enter on Angus Scattergood's house because Bodhi doesn't understand how anything works.
Yep, perfect. There's a reference to 401ks because Linux threatens the 2 wolves that are trying to capture Bodhi. They're the Team Rocket of this movie. And Bodhi is Pikachu. Riff and Skaz go in and they're just like, well, we didn't capture him, sorry. And Linux is just like, you guys just lost your health plans and your 401ks. And I was like, shit, working for the villain, you get a 401k and a health plan? Like, sign me the fuck up. The wolf designs also, as I'm thinking about the wolf designs reminded me of the Penguins of Madagascar movie with that wolf design.
Yeah, right, I can totally flex with that. I didn't care for the wolves at all. They really didn't feel integral to the plot for a lot of this.
No, we just needed like an overarching scary villain, and wolves are scary because et cetera, et cetera. I really liked how Scattergood walked.
Yeah.
Like the short, tight steps.
He's an interesting character design. I liked it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the character design in this movie, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah, I wish that they didn't have to make so many background animals and that you could see that they cloned all the character designs.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, I wish that there were less background animals in general, because I just didn't like seeing the same designs over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, limited budget.
I know. So, when Bodhi tries to meet Scattergood, Scattergood is put off because Bodhi is a dumb fanboy and tries to avoid him. Eventually, they end up lost in a back alley together, and Bodhi decides to play music at Rock and Roll Park to get money for Scattergood to return to his mansion. However, Riff and Skaz mistakenly kidnap Scattergood after they see Bodhi at the park. After Riff and Skaz realize their error, Linux angrily sends them to find Bodhi again, and they drop Scattergood off at his home. Very polite of them. Scattergood believes his career is over since he has less than a day to write a new song when he hears Bodhi playing on his guitar and invites him into his home with a facade of a lesson, creating a new song called Glorious. Bodhi later realizes he was used after hearing Scattergood take full credit for the song on the radio. Trey mocks Bodhi, everyone in the park bounces, Bodhi is then captured by Linux's henchmen, and under the effects of the tranquilizer darts, he reveals the fake Mastiff guards, and the wolves set off to go take over Snow Mountain. Bodhi is put into a boxing match with a bear that's literally 3 seconds of screen time.
Yeah. It's fine. I still had plenty to say at this point in the movie. I loved that they continued with Bodhi's little tail wags. Like, as they're writing the song, Bodhi's, like, laying on the ground and, like, is happily writing, and he's just wagging his little dog tail. And I enjoyed that he still looked visually different, especially because he stood out in, like, the city, because everything is pretty sleek and modern, and I also enjoyed that everything was in Chinese.
Yes.
All the newspapers, all the magazines. When Angus accidentally gets kidnapped instead of Bodhi, and he's, like, mouthing off, he's just like, "Who's in charge here? Large lad, I will call you Large lad." I don't know why that was funny to me, but it super was. Probably because it's Eddie Izzard doing it, and I could just kind of imagine him doing it.
Yeah. He did that good.
Was probably it. Eddie Izzard is great. He's also an abominable.
Oh, good lord.
Oh, no. He ripped off Rock Dog. Riff and Skaz driving the company car is very good. It's got the plate LNX13. And I don't know if I was just making the association with 13 being an unlucky number, but it was a very fitting car for them.
And I really think that was on purpose.
I hope it was on purpose because I really appreciated the detail. Kampa missing his son and appreciating all the little things that he did do is very good.
It is. Yes, it was cute.
Yeah. So Bodhi's job, like in Snow Mountain, was to get the sheep to and from work every day and like help them get into the fake dog costumes. And it was Kampa trying to do it himself, and he's just like, "How the fuck did Bodhi ever do this?" And like appreciating him a little bit more, and I enjoyed that. Bodhi also reminds me of my own dog because they try very hard to be good dog. And his little tail wags were very, I just love it so much.
Bork. What? Bork, bork, bork. I had nothing to say. It's fine. There's 29 minutes left at the point in which I'm writing this, and I felt like nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at this point, Bodhi and Angus have finished writing the song, and there's 29 minutes left, and I'm like, what the fuck? This should have happened in the first 30 minutes. Once the moment they set up, Angus needs to write a song, I was like, oh, okay, Bodhi's going to write the song.
Yeah, he's going to steal it from Bodhi.
Yeah. I really had wanted it to happen 15 minutes before it happened, because the break-in scene took a lot of time and just ate up a bunch of space in the movie that disengaged me.
Yeah, Bodhi, I feel like I wanted less time between Bodhi arriving at Scattergood's mansion and the Scattergood betrayal. But I also understand that we need to establish without... They're trying to establish without spelling... I don't know how to say this. They're trying to set up that Scattergood is like aloof and only thinks about himself and doesn't care about other people. Like, they're trying to set that up with the whole, like, Bodhi can't get into the house.
Yeah, I got it immediately. I got it once I saw the hedge maze and the electrified fence.
Right, but we're smart adults.
Okay.
Most Americans are not smart adults, so they need that spelled out for them, because when he does let Bodhi into the mansion for music, air quotes, music lessons, and he steals Glorious from him, it is the turning point for him as a character, and we need that explicitly spelled out. He's literally, I'm putting air quotes around all of this, just saying it because the podcasts are audio only and you can't see me doing it. Air quotes. He's letting Bodhi, he's letting his walls down and like letting Bodhi in to like see him as a person. End air quotes.
Okay.
It makes sense.
It's fine. They played No Surprises by Radiohead when Bodhi was sad, and I really liked that. It was good stuff.
I didn't know if we had ever seen... We didn't see Scattergood's eyes up until after this plot point, but I was just like, oh shit, we've never seen this cat's eyes. I also had a note that was, I napped during ad breaks and I thought I had missed something, honestly. JK, it turns out I napped through the whole second half of Rock Dog.
Oh, goodness.
So I had to rewatch it, but I didn't hate it.
No, it's almost over. Scattergood, yeah. Guilt-tripped by Ozzy for exploiting Bodhi, Ozzy, his robot butler, uses his old tour bus to find him. At Rock and Roll Park, Scattergood meets with Dharma and Sheep to discover Bodhi's capture when they see his dart-covered guitar. Scattergood foregoes sending in his new song to rescue Bodhi, even though the new song has already been on the radio and announced. Meeting Bodhi outside of Linux's hideout, Scattergood makes amends by giving his old acoustic guitar to Bodhi and takes him to Snow Mountain to stop Linux and his henchmen. Linux and his gang overpower Kampa and the whole village and attempt to devour the villagers, but Bodhi appears. After a climactic chase, Bodhi subdues the wolves by finding the fire and playing Scattergood's guitar, making the wolves, the villagers, and his friends levitate. Kampa banishes Linux with his iron paw and accepts Bodhi's ambition to play rock music. I love the stoner sheep and the fox, and I want to see a cartoon where they're roommates.
Dharma and Gurmi being good new friends to Bodhi was just like so pure and wholesome. And they were just like, it's very clear when he shows up that they're like, what the fuck is this country boy doing? We gotta take care of him.
Oh, and I love the scene where Dharma is like, don't look, but there's a real weirdo. And Gurmi immediately looks and he's like, oh shit, I looked. You said don't look, shit, but that made me want to look.
Yeah, no, Dharma and Gurmi are great. I love them.
Yeah, good characters.
Dharma is also just like the cute alt-rock girl, but she's like good friend. Like, she and Gurmi are chill.
Yeah, I really like that. And I like that she called Bodhi cute, but that was it. She was just like, ugh, this cute idiot.
He's cute. Really, what did she say? He's cute?
She said, like, he's cute, but stupid.
Oh, yeah. Like, she's like, yep. Basically, it's a dog. She's talking about dogs. I do like that we got to see Scattergood's eyes when he made a character decision to put friends first and career pressures second. Thanks, movie, for answering my earlier question.
Yep. The moment Dharma and Gurmi got into Scattergood's car, I was angry that there were only 15 minutes left because it finally got fucking good.
Yeah, I was like, God damn it. I wanted more Rock Dog.
I want all these characters to hang out, and now they're not gonna because it's the end of the fucking movie. And also, they set up the Grizz, like the bear that Bodhi was supposed to fight, and it just, yeah. Bodhi didn't even do the iron paw. He just leaps out of the cage. It was really because boring.
He didn't need to. He used his smarts.
Fair.
So here's where I did a little bit of research because I was like, no, Tibetan Mastiffs can totally fight off a bear. I was thinking about a different dog. But Tibetan Mastiffs were bred to fight off tigers, which is still pretty fucking badass. And weirdly, because I read too much into it, the reason that Tibetan Mastiffs do so well in high altitudes and like they adapt to it way faster than other mammals is because of their high hemoglobin levels, which are, drumroll please, due to interbreeding with Tibetan wolves.
Oh shit, there it is.
There it is. So I think that maybe Bodhi's mom is a wolf.
Also would have been a good part of the plot to have any.
That's dumb. This is just me being like, oh, that's a fun fact I just learned. Yay.
When they drive to the scene at the village, Bodhi immediately leaps out and goes to handle it. And the stoner sheep takes the wheel of the tour bus and goes, I have a plan. And he drives the bus up the stairs, like jumping it off of the stairs, to which it immediately crashes down and breaks the van. And I was like, wait, that was an amazing joke. Because I was really expecting the van to drive through all the wolves and help with the power of friendship. And the fact that it didn't was much funnier.
So because, well, I appreciated the fact that it was something that Bodhi had to handle on his own. And he could handle on his own. So he, as much as his friends wanted to help, this was like a Bodhi thing. And he needed to do it to, you know, do it on his own. That's the only way I can think to phrase it right now. But I thought, because you used the word sheep, I thought we were talking about Carl, the sheep that's always in the shower. And not Gurmi, who's like a goat yak thing.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so I had be nice to Carl.
Yes. Also, we put off Bodhi doing the fire paw until the very last second in the movie, which was just so annoying.
They wanted to prove a point that you don't, like, violence should be the last resort, I think.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. I liked it.
Bodhi has magic floating powers, and I really think this movie could have been better with a stronger second act.
I agree. Do you want to wrap it up for us?
Yep. Bodhi's defeated all the wolves at the city. Angus Scattergood gives full credit to Bodhi for writing their song. Bodhi forms a band with Dharma. Bodhi forms a band with Dharma and Gurmi as they, including Scattergood, Fleetwood, and the sheep, sing and play glorious to the city, the Snow Mountain villagers, Kampa, and most of the redeemed wolves. All of that happened off screen.
Yep.
At Linux's old fight palace. Outside, Trey tries to convince the bear bouncer that he's a part of the band, but is rejected. Scattergood recommends Bodhi's band to Ian as Bodhi shows the audience his blue energy wave. Why the fuck did the wolves suddenly become good?
Because everyone can be united via the power of music, Melanie.
Well, I kind of
also
thought...
they lost their pack leader.
Oh, you think that was it? I thought they were implying that Bodhi's energy wave had like a special chill out power.
I think it did, though, because when they all got blasted back at Snow Mountain, they're hanging out with the sheep and everybody's chill. Like, and Linux gets blasted off again by Kampa.
Yeah, I feel so, like Bodhi's power also includes, like, a weed element.
Yeah, so I think Bodhi is, like, peace, love, rock and roll, and Kampa is just, like, well, let's also fuck the guy that ruined everything for all of us.
Yeah.
Which I think helped. So the wolves not having their, like... Because the whole thing was Linux was banished and he wanted to get back at Kampa. So once that was done, like, once that whole bit was over, the rest of the wolves really had no purpose. So I guess they can be, yeah, they can be redeemed, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The crowd cycles looked really dumb in that concert scene because they only had like two motions up or down, but the way that they had the crowds animated. So it's a very sparse looking crowd. Sorry, real effects. The up and down motions of the crowd were almost like, it was like one person was up and then down, up, down, up. There was no variation. It just looked like they were Oompa Loompa-ing.
Yeah, I get it, though.
Yeah. I also wasn't a fan of the very simple end credits, especially after that stunning opening sequence.
That's fair.
But yeah. Rock Dog was fine.
I agree with that statement. I think Rock Dog needed a tight act two that got us moving and spent more time on Bodhi being trapped with the wolves and learning things about the wolf-sheep conflict.
Yeah.
While we got kind of a buddy movie with Dharma, Gurmi, and Angus. I think it would have really sped things along.
Buddy movie. That would have been great. Yeah, the plot of this movie definitely is one of its major downfalls. The other was Yeah, let's get into why Rock Dog didn't do too well.
Tell us.
Rock Dog grossed Rock Dog grossed $9.4 million in the U.S. and 14.7 million in other territories, with a worldwide gross of 60... Sorry, I can't read anymore.
Bad at read.
Yeah, so Rock Dog grossed 9.4 million in the US and 14.7 million in other territories, and had a worldwide gross of 24.1 million against its previously mentioned production budget of 60 million.
Oh.
Yeah. In the US, it was released alongside Collide and Get Out, and was still only expected to gross about 6 to 7 million from just over 2,000 theaters on its opening weekend.
Wow.
It ended up grossing under 4 million, 3.7 million, finishing 11th in the box office. And it was one of the worst ever debuts for a film playing in over 2,000 theaters.
That's rough.
In China, the movie earned 5.7 million.
Holy shit.
It was suggested that the largest Chinese theater chain, Wanda Cinema Line, attempted to limit the number of screens the film would be shown on. The film was shown on only of 7 of Wanda's screens, which is 0.3% of all of its screens in China.
Wow.
And this, allegedly, is because Huayi Bros, the film's production company and the owner of a competing theater chain, poached Wanda's executive, Jerry Yi, a few months before the film's release, and he was made CEO of its film division. So Wanda Cinema Line was just like, we're not going to play your stupid fucking movie, Huayi Bros, because you stole our executive.
So it was corporate espionage against Rock Dog.
It was corporate espionage against Huayi Bros, which I'm saying totally wrong for anybody who actually does Chinese. It is spelled H-U-A-Y-E, and then bros, obviously, brothers, shortened. Yeah, so the production company was just like, hey, we need a really, really good CEO for our film division, and they took, air quotes, took, they probably made Jerry Yi an excellent offer, and he accepted, but Wanda Cinema Line saw that as a huge slap in the face, and I guess when you're making a movie that you want people to go see, you really, really don't benefit from them hating you, do you?
Yeah.
So I think because Rock Dog wasn't widely seen, audiences didn't hate it, but they didn't love it either. It's got an approval rating of about 45% and has an average rating of 5.3 out of 10. And the critical consensus seems to be Rock Dog is amiable enough, but its second-tier animation and uninspired story add up to a movie whose meager charms are likely to escape all but the youngest and least demanding viewers. I disagree.
Yeah.
I think the animation, while not top tier, the animation's fine. I wouldn't call it second tier at all.
I respect that.
The problem is, once again, American audiences are used to seeing Disney Pixar movies, and they can dump millions and millions and millions upon billions of dollars into research and development, and they can spend the money to render the films that they make, which I don't think real effects can do. So I'm sure if real effects had a budget of $140 million for this movie, and they had decades of R&D behind them, and they were able to afford to render everything that their R&D department had made for them that they could benefit from, Rock Dog would have looked very, very, very different. Same with if it had been made by DreamWorks or Blue Sky or Sony. They've got double the budget. This is basically an Illumination film. And it looks like an Illumination film.
Yeah.
But once again, it's an outsourced movie. You're making it for half the budget. You shouldn't expect the quality. People don't take this into account. So they're saying like, oh, well, it's second tier. You're making it for half of the budget. Of course it's not going to look as good. They can look amazing, but they're still not going to look like it fucking... I think Monsters University was a beautifully rendered film. I don't like the story of it, but it's beautifully made. And it costs a lot of fucking money to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my hot take. Rock Dog is fine. It's a completely fine movie. I would say it is above average. That 5.3 seems accurate. Maybe let's push it to a 5.6. It's not visually stunning because it had a budget of $60 million. The story isn't compelling enough to save it because it had to be bland enough to appeal to American audiences without seeming too Chinese, and it still had to appeal to Chinese audiences without seeming too American. And I honestly think its true downfall was the lack of marketing in the U.S. and the fact that the two Chinese companies decided to fight it out, which led to Rock Dog just kind of fucking tanking. And I would say that Rock Dog is season 4's Strange Magic, but we have other films to watch, so.
Yeah, I can flex with that.
I can flex so hard.
I thought Rock Dog was fine. I agree with your assessment of it.
Yeah, Rock Dog was totally okay. This is the problem. When a movie is fine, we don't have a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if a movie is really, really trash, or we don't remember it, or it's just stupid, we have nothing to talk about.
That's where we're at right now, eh?
I mean, we're like 57 and a half minutes, so after you edit out me being unable to fucking give the budget for Rock Dog, probably, yeah, short episode, because we liked Rock Dog.
All right. Well, if you'd like to subscribe to our Patreon at the $10 tier this week, we have for you some very hastily produced boards of what I think a better Act 2 for Rock Dog could have been. Want to see my shoddy drawings of what Rock Dog would look like if I did it? Want to see my dumb jokes about the stoner sheep and Angus Scattergood fighting over which kind of drugs are best? Check our Patreon, binches.
We seriously have to make a Patreon.
No, we don't. This is more fun.
No, I think it would be funny to make it and then have it have like normal shit on it. So people are just like, wait a second. Where the shitty Rock Dog storyboards as promised. Whereas like $10, it's like you get like an extra monthly episode.
I like it. Well, all
right. I think it's funny. We just don't have time for that right now because no. My movie is about to kick into overtime, which is stupid because it doesn't come out until next year.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough.
But yeah, we will see you next time on Animated Opinions. I'm Melanie.
Emily.
I'm gonna get a snack.
Oh wait, here comes Praline. Praline! Are you a rock dog? Are you a good girl?
Bork, yes, bork, you're bork, good bork.
Girl. Oh, she's so good. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Okay.